Hello, TSA family. This is a TSA telegram. Hello, everyone. I'm Pepper McCormick, your state TSA president. So I'm here with our state advisor, Ship, and Justin Miller. Today, we're here talking about public speaking, and we're here to just kind of give you a little bit of a crash course. And I'm thinking I will also learn a lot from this session.
The term crash course may be the actual most specific way to talk about this, because public speaking is not this like easy thing that everybody just jumps into and makes it, you know, beautiful and perfect. There are kids that get up on stage, and when we watch them, we're like, oh man, that poor kid, that's a train wreck, or you can't hear him or anything else. So, you know, crash course in public speaking might be the best way to describe what we're going to do today. Justin, what do you have to say?
I agree. You know, public speaking for me is more of just a conversation than it is an actual prepared thing. The more prepared it is, the more nervous I get. So the more free and open and just have a conversation with whoever's out in your audience is the best way to look at it. But it is important to plan it out a little bit, you know, and prepare. You don't just walk into it and say, oh, I'm going to talk about this topic today.
Yeah. Well, I have done that as a teacher, but I don't think it's the right way to do things. I really remember this professor in college talking about how important it was to have a plan for your public speaking, and he calls it the 5 P's of public speaking: planning, preparation, consistency, practice, and performance. And I know there's a C in the middle of those P's, but that's just, but that planning, that preparation, those two things seem like they're actually the same thing, but it is a little bit different. Before you ever even begin to prepare how you want to deliver that speech or how you want to put it onto paper, you need to plan it out. You need to have a thesis. You need to have points of interest. You need to have a topic that excites you and makes you want to give this to your listeners.
Yes, and it's also important to have, as you're doing your preparation, have supporting details. And don't forget to cite those sources, whether it be in your speech or afterwards. Many times on today's news, we hear about plagiarism cases that are a big deal. And in public speaking that we do, that's, again, another thing that we have to be very vigilant about in giving credit to those who have made things known before.
Practice may be the one that I think that students especially want to skip over. They think they can just go out there and perform. You know, it's really easy to take the I'm just going to wing this approach, because that's what we adults do. And it has come from years and years of practice, practice, practice. You know, our first time getting up and giving a speech, I guarantee you I did not get up and just start rambling and talking. I can remember it clear as day. I got the ending role in the school play. And Justin, you're going to love this. It was a Cabbage Patch play. That tells you how old I am, from the 1980s. And
wow, I was like 3 in that point.
Yeah, right?
I didn't exist.
Oh, wow.
Anyhow, so my role in this play at the very end, and I had practiced it for days. I was so worried I was going to forget. I couldn't use any paper, anything. I had to thank our teacher, and I had to give her like a bunch of flowers. And I had like a one-line free phrase. It was, thank you, Mrs. whatever her name was. God bless her. I don't know. And thank you for all your hard work and dedication and for preparing us so well for this play. Like, that was the concept of what I had to say. And I practiced it every night with my mom and my grandma, and I was so ready. I got up on stage and I started to take that giant deep breath right there as you're like going to say it. And I went,
uh-oh.
It was gone. I don't know where it went.
Oh, no.
I looked out across the audience, and all I could see was my grandma in the like largest mouth voice ever going, thank you, Mrs. Robinson. And then it hit me, and I was like, and thank you, Mrs. Robinson, for being awesome and always helping us with everything and making sure that we were really prepared for the sad event. And then you can, here's your flowers. Have a nice day. And I ran off the stage.
You know, mine was similar to that. It was a freshman in high school, and we did Beauty and the Beast. Of course, me being who I am, I don't remember what part
Beauty
of
and the Beast?
No. It might have been. No, I was the king.
Wow.
But I had one line, and I forgot it. So I think we've all been there, done that. But it's also important to remember that performance is just as much as part of that practice. And when you get up on that stage, you've practiced with maybe 5 or 10 other people, but you're looking at a couple hundred. And in a TSA competition, okay, you have 3 judges sitting there. But to me, those 3 people can be more intimidating than an entire audience of people.
Yeah.
And especially if it's me and Dez and somebody else out in the audience. Dez has taught me very well how to do the old stone face.
I will tell you that, that is one of the things that, you know, judges pride themselves on, putting a little bit of extra effort into to looking nasty.
Yeah.
Like, it is mean. They just look mean.
Or I like to make people laugh. It sometimes crack a smile at one point in their speech, and maybe it's not supposed to be a smiling moment, just to see how they react. Because it, just as much as part of your speech is the delivery and the content, it's how you present it. You know, do your facial expressions match your body language?
Yeah, it's also in the performance of the speech.
Yes.
I remember during my extemporaneous speech, my performance might have been better than my actual speech was. I know Ship can definitely comment on that. But I'm very showy in the face, and like I use my eyebrows and I use a lot of expressions a lot, and I talk with my hands, and that can always be a problem for people that are doing their presentations. And like, how exactly should I manage my hands and my movements and so on and so forth?
And I think that comes down to, you know, looking at what makes a really effective public speaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's five qualities that we have to include, you know, whether or not you're confident, you're passionate about your subject, you know, the ability to have a little sustenance into that topic. It can't just be, cars are cool, you know, and it also has to be the ability to tell a really good story.
I know as a judge, I look at it as when the person walks in the room, how they carry themselves. It's not just when you get up to give that speech. It's from the minute you step through that door. How do you present yourself? How do you look? How are your mannerisms? Do you interact with the judges? It's everybody thinks, okay, it's just when I get up there and give my speech. Not for me. What about you, Ship?
I have to agree with Justin. You know, I really am watching that student as they're walking through the door. Now, I judged at nationals. I don't get to judge at our state conference, but being at nationals and watching the middle school public speaking contest, I can tell you that all of the judges, the moment you walked in the door, you started to make that first impression. And I think that's where we're at. You've got to make your first impression. And some of us have great qualities when we speak. But if you don't have the confidence as you're walking in the door, if your head's drooped, you're playing with your hair, if you're playing with a handful of papers. A couple years ago, kid walked in and honestly had his whole speech in his hand and never needed it. I don't know. It was like a security blanket. And he was like beating that speech off his hand the whole time he was giving it. I was like, oh no, dude, you got to stop. You got to stop. But you could tell that he knew his topic. Another thing is, a lot of us have accents and we have these great speech almost impediments where you'll say funny words, you'll say things. You got to be cognizant of those and really adjust them in your daily speech pattern so that when you do get up on stage and you start to speak, you don't say one of your words that maybe you goofingly say wrong all the time. I'm famous for wash your hands. But if I'm giving a speech, I need to make sure that I say wash your hands. And I have to think about that. That mm-hmm. is a word that stumbles for me.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I have seen this with others. When we get to Cedar Lakes, being from the Northern Panhandle, we seem to inherit the accent for at least a few weeks while we're there.
Yeah, we just really envelop ourselves in the entire atmosphere of Cedar Lakes.
Yeah, we do. And I can't wait for that in 2022 to hopefully get back there and see all the smiling faces and the accents that come with it.
Something else that I think is important is, you know, while we're not, we want to make sure that we don't pick up the accents, or we want to exude all that confidence when we walk in the door, have a speech that's worth telling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make your judges, or your listeners in this case, your judges are your listeners, make them be at the end of their seats waiting to see what the next detail is. Because if you continually are talking about this same topic and it becomes very humdrum, blah, 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 and some of them feel like that.
Oh, a lot of them do if they're not done well.
You really need to make sure that you've got these people at the end of their seats. They're waiting to see what you're going to say next. Have little fun things in there that are almost little nuggets that make them like, oh, I see that. Oh, I hear that. Oh, that sounds good. And and be able to really play into that ability to tell a really good story and keep your audience right at the end of their seats.
Well, and for me, I don't know how you feel, Chip, but if a speech is good enough to make me put my pen down and not make notes during that actual speech, that says something to me.
Oh, yeah. If I'm caught, you've got about 35 seconds to catch me.
I tell you what, you got more than I do. You got about 15 to 20 with me. If your opening two sentences don't catch me or give me something that brings my interest in, I'm probably going to be writing most of the time.
Right. And I think what we're talking about is that prepared public speech.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our high school contest in prepared public speaking is actually a 24-hour event. You get your topic, you have 24 hours, boom, you got to put that presentation up there. Our extemped is a whole nother even ballgame, mm-hmm. because that's something that I think that is the greatest contest we can have any kid do.
I agree.
Because there are so many times in your life that you're going to have to go out there and somebody's going to give you a topic, whether it's in conversation or it's in a class, and you've got to be able to react and give a good quality individual approach to why you think this is the way it is. And in the case of extemporaneous speech, you've got 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Pepper, I know you. This is your contest that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
But I like to tease Pepper because this past year, as I'm watching her give her extemporaneous speech, and I told her I was going to tell a story on her. She was doing a fantastic job. She had a topic that she's passionate about, she's knowledgeable about. And it was so funny because she got through the first part of her topic. And then I looked and then I watched her face. And it was like her thoughts and her mind went out the window. Or I can't decide whether or not she just fell down a whole flight of steps.
Yeah.
Because it was somewhere in between the two things, Justin and I. I know you didn't get to see this one.
I wish I would have now.
I had a Windows XP reboot right there. You could have heard the sound of my brain just go, da-da-da-da.
It just shows it quit supporting it a few years ago.
It was seriously like her entire mind trying to reboot and nothing happened in between.
Yeah.
And that's okay because, you know what? The greatest thing about getting to do these competitions, no matter what competition we're talking about, whether it's public speaking or any of the others, if we can take the moment and we can realize it is okay to fail here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't ask that every kid get first place. We don't ask that every kid be the best because you're going to have bad days and it's okay. But to be able to have this safe environment to learn in, to grow in, and to fail in, that's what's going to make you successful in the next levels of your life.
Exactly. And I think, too, you know, that's important to go back to that point. Yes, we are judging you on a competition that you're working on, but we're also there to help you. You know, we talk about all the time, you know, oh, we're, you know, marking scores, things like that. But all of us are there in the dining hall, usually at the same time you are. Come up and talk to me. Come up and ask me questions afterwards, not before, after. And I will be more than happy to sit down with you and give you pointers of what we saw and what we did. You know, it's not that we're standoffish people. We're there to help you get better, not criticize you for not, you know, being successful. It is okay to fail.
And that's one major thing that I really liked about the competition and the auditing that I had and being able to talk with my judges. I really was able to take what they said and, like, I'm able to use it in the upcoming competitions for this year. So since I want to do extemporaneous speech again, I'm going to take all the notes that I had from the previous year and use those as a way to guide myself in how to train. Extemporaneous speech is also training. You need to train on how to just give a speech within a small amount of time or in just regular conversation. You need to actually train. It's not just one of those things that you just show up and do. You still have to train for it. So it's a really good opportunity. You're right, to fail in a safe place that's going to support you and tell you how to fix it and how to be better.
And just because you fail or you didn't win today, don't look at that as like, oh, you're the worst public speaker in the world. It really just could be that you got ousted or bested by a kid who had a much better day.
Mm-hmm.
Do set yourself up in some ways, though, for your own version of success. You know, when you are practicing, take the time to dress in the clothing that you will wear in the competition. If you're going to wear 2-inch heels, ladies, practice in 2-inch heels. If you're going to stand there and dance and sway, practice your dance and sway, but make sure it looks like it's part of the presentation. I don't know how many times I know that right now the hairstyle for young men, and ladies, I'll fault you on this too. So many of you will come in with your hair down, which looks a little bit more professional. But if that's not your typical normal way of wearing your hair and you start fiddling with it, you look distracted. You look uncomfortable. And again, remember, confidence matters. We want you to be confident coming in the door, but I also want you as confident as you are when you're standing up there giving a speech. And if you're flipping your hair or twirling it around a finger or digging it out of, like, with both hands, pulling it up out of the what almost looks like the roots, you are not looking confident. You look distracted.
And for guys, use gel. Hair gel is your best friend when public speaking for guys, in my opinion. You know, I am horrible about running my fingers through my hair. So it impacts your confidence and your likability, too, because I, as a judge, start to question, okay, how confident are they about what they're telling me? And I think, too, Shep, something we need to focus on is you mentioned failure. It's not failure. As a judge, I consider it a success if you got up there and tried.
I agree.
You don't fail if you don't try. Mm-hmm. So never be afraid to say, you know what, I'm just not good at this.
Yeah. And the problem is that it doesn't matter. All of our events have pretty much some speaking component.
Yes, they
do. So you are only learning life skills. Mm-hmm. You're learning how to be interviewed. You're learning how to accept constructive criticism. You're learning how to think on your feet. You're learning things that many of your classmates have never taken the opportunity to try. And by doing that, you're only making yourself a bigger chance of success in your future. And I think that's what we need to focus on. How can we make ourselves more successful in the future?
Yeah. And I think, too, something we're going to encounter now after, you know, the last 2 years and the way they've gone is coming back to in-person events. Speaking to somebody on a Zoom or Teams call, whatever it might be, is a completely different world than standing up in front of three judges or an entire group of people. So that's something else to take into consideration as you practice and move forward.
Yeah. So I guess in wrapping up, you know, if I could talk about the things that I think make great public speakers, you know, be prepared, you know, hit those P's, be prepared, plan ahead, have your outfits selected, have your hairstyle selected, do all the things you need to do to look your best. Then when you go into the room and you start presenting, be your best, do your best. If your best, whatever it is for that particular day, and be prepared. Take the time to practice. Be confident, be intelligent, and be likable. And that's all we can ask of you, because every TSA member in West Virginia is a success.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you guys so much for having this presentation for us. We really appreciate it. And I just want to say that I'm going to definitely take some of these pointers and use them for my own competition. I want to thank you guys for listening to us. And this has been the TSA Telegram.